I had always assumed that Morgan's irrational hatred was something personal, reserved for me and me alone. I had assumed that for whatever reason, Morgan's persecution was the result of the political and philosophical enmity of certain members of the White Council, that he was nothing but a pawn for someone higher up in the game. But politicians don't make good kamikazes. That kind of dedication is reserved for zealots of principle and lunatics. For the first time, I considered the notion that perhaps Morgan's hate was not directed at me personally, but at those that he truly believed to be violators of the laws of magic, murderers and traitors. I knew people who would face death, even embrace it, rather than surrender their principles. Karen Murphy was one of them, and I was friends with most of the rest. At the end of the day, Morgan was a cop. He worked for a different body of law, of course, and under a different set of guidelines, but his duties were the same. Pursue, combat, and apprehend those who violated the laws put in place to protect people from harm. He'd spent more than a century as a policeman, dealing with some of the more nightmarish things on the planet. Thinking of him in that light suddenly gave me a different understanding of Morgan's character. I'd seen burned-out cops before. They'd labored long and hard in the face of danger and uncertainty to uphold the law and protect the victims of crimes, only to see both the law and the victims it should have protected broken, beaten, and abused again and again. It mostly happened to the cops who genuinely cared, who believed in what they were doing, who passionately wanted to make a difference in the world. Somewhere along the way, their passion had become bottled anger. The anger had fermented into bitter hatred. Then the hatred had fed upon itself, gnawing away at them over years, even decades, until only a shell of cold iron and colder hate remained. I didn't feel contempt for burned-out cops. I didn't feel anger toward them. All I ever felt was sadness and empathy for their pain. They'd seen too much in their daily battle against criminals. 10 or 20 or 30 years of witnessing the most monstrous aspects of humanity had slowly turned them into walking casualties of war. And Morgan had been on his beat for more than a century. Morgan didn't hate me. He hated the bad guys. He hated the wizards who abused the power he had dedicated his life to using to protect others. When he looked at me, he didn't see Harry Dresden. He could only see the atrocities and tragedies that had burned themselves into his mind and heart. I understood him. It didn't make me like him, but I could understand the pain that drove him to persecute me. Of course, my sensitivity and empathy were completely irrelevant because they wouldn't do a damn thing to stop him. If he charged me, I wouldn't have any options. "Morgan," I rasped, "please don't. We can't let Corpse Taker divide us like this. Can't you see that? That was her intention when she took Lucio." "Traitor," he snarled. "Liar." I ground my teeth in frustration. "My God, man, thousands of people are about to die." His mouth twisted, baring his teeth all the way to the gums. "And you will be the first." If he charged me again, I wouldn't have any choice but to fight. And he was at least as strong as me, and far more experienced, not to mention the enchantment-breaking silver sword in his hand. If I didn't kill him fast, he would kill me. It was as simple as that. And even if I did kill him, he would spend his death curse on me, and it wouldn't be like the feeble thing Cassius had thrown. Morgan would obliterate me. I couldn't run. I couldn't survive fighting him, regardless of whether or not I beat him. The best I could hope for would be to take him with me. If I died, Sue would go wild, reverting to the instincts of her ancient spirit. She would hunt. People would die. But if Morgan died, it would leave only Kowalski and Ramirez to stop Cowell and Gravain. Even if they could manage to pull off some kind of necromancy to shield them from the vortex as they went in, they would never be able to beat the necromancers within. They would certainly die, and not long after that, the Dark Hallow would annihilate thousands of innocent lives. With Morgan leading them, they might have a chance. Not a good one, but at least there was a chance. Which meant that if I wanted to stop the Dark Hallow and save all those lives, I had only one choice. I leaned my suddenly trembling hand against Sue's leg, and she sank back into a passive crouch. Morgan let out a bellow of defiance and determination and rushed me. I lowered my shield. My heart pounded with a fear so strong that I nearly threw up. The lightning gleamed on the silver blade of his sword. I dropped my staff to the ground and faced him, arms at my sides, my hands clenched into terrified fists. I readied my will, my own death curse, picturing Gravain in my thoughts. At least I could give the wardens a better chance for victory if I could kill or cripple one of the bastards on my way out. Time stretched out into an endless moment. I watched Morgan's sword sweep up to the vertical, the blade a gorgeous silver that reflected the lightning ripping apart the spinning vortex behind me.
"Harry!"
Butters screamed, his voice horrified, the drum pounding frantically. As Morgan struck, I took the coward's way out and closed my eyes. I knew that it was inevitable that one day I would die, but I didn't want to watch it coming.